we present the news quiz with your chairman, Simon Hoggart. Hello and welcome again to the news quiz. We start with an item from the BBC Online's Year in Politics, read by Peter Donaldson.
Prime Minister Tony Blair's wife, Cherie, gives birth to the couple's fourth child, Leo. Click here to watch.
Many thanks to Nicola Latham of London for that. Let's now meet the teams. Will you welcome, please, first on my right, Andy Hamilton and Linda Smith. I'm challenging them on my left, Alan Corran and Rebecca Front. Your first question, Andy. Who might soon be saying tan-ta-ra?
Right, well, this is the very complex and difficult issue of fox hunting. So difficult, in fact, that Tony Blair left the country. So to avoid having to vote. And it is a difficult issue. I mean, at one end of the question, you've got that very difficult problem of, you know, tearing a mammal to bits. Is it cruel? Because the scientists are still studying that one. I don't know on that one. And then the other big concern is they say they're worried now that hunting will be driven underground. Well, I don't mind that. I think that's quite fair because it gives the fox more of an advantage underground. I mean, the dogs might, but the horses will be at a definite... They'll struggle underground for a hot pursuit. I feel that the law is a rather blunt instrument to bring in a whole act banning fox hunting. I couldn't understand why hunting couldn't continue with some form of compromise, like, you know, they're not allowed to hunt foxes, but they are allowed to hunt Lawrence Llewellyn Bowen. Because I'm sure most people would support that. In fact, a lot of us would pay good money to watch that. So,
I think there is a loophole there, because it's only hunting with dogs. They can continue to hunt the fox without dogs. They can ride after it, jump off and tear it to pieces themselves with their teeth. Nothing stopping them doing that. Seems perfectly all right.
But it's all theoretical. It's not going to become law, is it? Because it's going to be an election.
I don't quite understand, though, why Tony Blair's so nervous of offending the fox-hunting lobby, because these are people who would never in a million years ever vote for him. Even if he bred foxes specially to be hunted, they would never vote for him, these people. So why doesn't he just, when they say, we'll lose 80,000 jobs, he should just say, actually, I calculate it, about 90,000, so you've probably only got 80,000 toes to count on, haven't you, you inbred weirdos? I think he should just have a laugh. They're never going to vote for him. What does it matter?
Also, the other thing is that they usually, if they want to stop something, they usually tax it out of existence, don't they? Why doesn't he just put 800% tax on red coats and horns? You know, there aren't many people who have something that goes da-da-da-da in their house.
It's the overwhelming vote by MPs in favour of banning hunting with hounds and hare coursing. Many people in the countryside are appalled at the government's destruction of traditional rural pursuits, and as one son of the soil pointed out, next thing you know, it'll be illegal to marry your own sister. Linda, which wheeler dealer took a £5 million punt on the bald guy?
Oh, yes, this is William Hague's little bonus. He's just got £5 million from this chap Wheeler, big gambling entrepreneur. And nothing like this has ever happened to William Hague in his life. £5 million he's made up when his Auntie Doreen sends him a tenner at Christmas. All of a sudden, now I think he'll just go mad with it. He's not, you know, they're quite strapped for cash, so he's going to be going mad. He's going to be, come on, Fionn, we're going down to Harvester.
It'll be Viv Nicholson all over again, won't it?
It will. It'll be spend, spend, spend. It just can't be trusted with that sort of money.
But he didn't he give him the money because he thought it wasn't fair? It wasn't fair that everyone was giving money to Tony Blair.
Think about this. He's in the gambling trade, right? Obviously, the Tories are miles behind in the polls. You know, everyone's betting on Tony Blair to win. That's not good from a bookmaker's point of view. So I think the £5 million is a sprat to catch a mackerel. It's to lure some mug punters to bet on Hague. He's no fool.
Well, he is, because he's just given £5 million.
Yeah, you make a fair point, Andy.
Mr. Wheeler's company, IG, stands for Intelligent Gambler, the second most unlikely oxymoron after Compassionate Conservative. 2 points to Linda. Rebecca, whose race win turned out to have been artificially stimulated?
This is the Metropolitan Police, who had a very successful year for ethnic recruiting last year. and over the course of 6 months recruited 218 members of ethnic minorities. But by mistake, they had included in that count Australians, Canadians, Irish people, and people who'd been abroad on holiday. And the actual number is, in fact, four.
And that's all the facts as well, all the laughs are there, it's all true. Four out of 218. That's the police idea of being quite accurate, I think.
The mistake was a simple slip-up in the statistical office, said the Met's chief statistician, David Irving. 2 points to Rebecca. Alan, whose bite turned out to be even worse than their bark?
Well, this is the Huntingdon Lab and the Royal Bank of Scotland and the pressure being brought to shut this place by animal rights, either madmen or benefactors, depending on whether I park my car close to the BBC or not. I can't remember. Anyway, it'll be dark. I've got my own balaclava. It's cold out there. animal rights activists are bringing pressure to bear on investors in the Royal Bank of Scotland because the Royal Bank of Scotland has secured an overdraft for the Huntingdon Labs.
And didn't the government used to invest in the labs but decided to just quietly withdraw its investment, didn't it?
No, privatised.
Is it?
Mm. Absolutely right. And we start round two with a label seen on a pack of organic smoked tofu by S. Murphy of Belfast.
Warning, this product is produced in a factory where nuts are handled regularly.
Linda, who took his wild bunch to court, hoping that the scales of justice would be weighted in his favour.
This is the metric martyr, isn't it? Who has been selling his bananas and his martyrs in pounds and ounces instead of in metric things. as you see, I am fully cognizant with the metric system. And there's been a bit of fraud. I don't quite understand how it's come to court if he's been grassed up by special metric supergrasses.
Well, he
hasn't
been
asking
round
for it.
It's people.
Publicity for this shop, isn't it?
You think it's publicity?
Well, that's a cynical view.
He's that's
an,
very cynical.
What? He's an absolute dingbat. I mean, don't you really want to go into that shop and order 50 quid's worth of raspberries and watch him pack them and then pay him with a sack of half crowns and then teach him about metrication?
The saddest person in this story is the government official who had to go undercover to buy some bananas from him. Now, it's hardly Mission Impossible, is it? Your mission, should you choose to accept it, is to convince a greengrocer that you're an ordinary member of the public. And it was this elaborate subterfuge, you know, and you had to hand over the bananas and express it in yards or whatever he did.
Well, I don't know how they even understood what he was saying, because they just go, you know, and I'm 45 pounds. How can you tell if that's kilos or pounds? I couldn't tell.
And a whole host of people have jumped on the bandwagon of this, and there's a photograph of him being taken out for a quarter pounder. You know, that being the opposite thing, by a Tory MP, and he thought, my God, he hasn't even been found guilty yet.
Mr. Thorburn is now trying to get his case taken up by some of the UK's top campaigning journalists, including Paul Foote, or Paul 29 centimetres, as we call him. Andy, which court is refusing to dilute an advertising standard authority ruling?
Is this a very exciting question about Ribena?
Yes.
Well, this is about whether or not Ribena can advertise one of their drinks as being tooth kind. As one word, tooth kind. I think it should be banned just for creating a word like tooth kind. But technically, it may rot your teeth slightly less quickly than conventional Ribena, but nonetheless, it's still full of sugar and stuff, and your teeth turn purple. So they were told they can't say tooth kind anymore. I don't know what they're going to say. Their lawyers will have to come up with something like tooth friendly or
tooth indifferent.
Yeah.
What really bothers me is that it took people so long to spot the nefariousness of all this. I mean, I'm not great on conspiracies, but the people who supported them in their campaign was a British Dental Association. If you think about that for a moment, you could see who a dentist wouldn't mind if Ribena made all the choppers fall out of everybody. And the ASA hit on both of them, but it's not allowed to stop the dentist practicing as a dentist, just stop Ribena saying what it says. But The idea that they were supported by a dentist seems to me to have left it wide open.
And the actual box had it... It looked as if there were sort of little bristles of a toothbrush coming out of the blackcurrant, more or less implying that this stuff could be used as toothpaste.
Or like that rinse that they give you after they've just extracted right, yeah. two molars, you know. Just flush your mouth out with Ribena, Mr. Hamilton. So Benson and Hedges could start up with Lungkind cigarettes and it'll be the whole beginning of a new linguistic trend, I'm not sure.
The ASA ruled that a poster showing bottles of Ribena Toothkind as bristles of a toothbrush was a bit misleading, in the sense that Railtrack is a bit inept or Chris Evans is a bit annoying. Alan, which pair managed to take the horsey set for a right royal ride?
What have you got?
You'll never read my writing.
It's going to be a difficult story
I know,
to write
I
down.
Think I can't read her. I can't read her writing, but my memory was jogged by the movement of a woman. These were two lesbians who ran a massage parlour. I don't know whether the massage parlour was for lesbians or anybody else, but there were these two large women who were involved with horses, as well as other women. Now, maybe they massage horses, I don't know. Being in these unisex places, it's quite possible a large stallion comes out and you give it a going over with a Brillo pad. It's the roses in its cheeks, but they... that was their trade. What they actually did, they were confidence tricksters. And, of course, I don't know how, but they could mix freely with the English aristocracy. What a surprise that is. It's a lot of ghastly people taking money off one another for unsavoury services. Perfectly all right with me.
Didn't they sponsor the Royal Windsor Horse Show or something? I mean, they managed to con Prince Philip. Hard to imagine an intellectual titan like him being taken in. But
Well, they handed over a dud cheque for $175,000 for the Windsor Horse Show. When the cheque bounced, the Greek hit the roof. Rebecca, why was the Customs and Excise bakery ruling full of holes?
Oh, this is the bagel story. Some called it a bagel, some called it a bagel. I'm dithering here because I can't quite remember.
You're Lithuanian, it's bagel.
Thank you. Bagel works for me. The story was, as far as I remember, that there was some tax implication or something if it could be proven that... Proved. Does that work for a bakery story? It does, doesn't it? If you could say that a bagel was a takeaway hot food, then you had to pay VAT on it or something like that.
Yeah.
But in fact, the point made by a particular bagel company was that they were only heating it up because it altered the texture, and that by the time people took it back to their offices, it was in fact cold. Which... Because, of course, if you heat up a baked potato, it alters the texture, and by the time you get it back to the office, it's cold. But somehow, that's different from eating a bagel. Presumably that was the story that you were talking
Somewhere
about.
Somewhere in there was embedded the correct answer, yes.
And no bagels in another item this week. Simon de Montfort has been outed as being an anti-Semite. So I think it's safe to assume that there will be no bagel outlets in the city of Leicester. I think we can be fairly sort of confident about that, because apparently there's an ancient charter. Am I the only person who read this?
No, no,
like
true.
I was come off another planet.
Saying anti-Semite, he merely killed 300 Jews.
Yeah, you know, but they nice. Did in those days, didn't yeah. they?
By the standards of the times, he was known as Simon Dewkind.
Quite possibly. But there is apparently an edict which is still in existence, they've just discovered, in Leicester, that no Jew or Jewess is allowed to live there. And this is a bit embarrassing because Leicester is a very ethnically diverse community. It's even more ethnically diverse than the Metropolitan Police, apparently. There's nothing to do with bagels, but anyway, I think there's a connection there.
The court has ruled that bagels heated up to improve their texture are exempt from VAT, but if they're toasted, they qualify for VAT. There's been a raging debate about this. The Times, for example, talks of the symbolic value of bread, pointing out that the English word lady comes from the Anglo-Saxon for loaf kneader, but the origin of loaf kneader's baps is not revealed. 2 points to Rebecca.
How does lady come from loaf kneader? Were they deaf in the Middle Ages? How do you get from loaf kneader to lady?
It's a few red
billions of years.
Probably a greengrocer, wasn't it, going... No, Nina.
And if we're talking about greengrocers, you might be interested to know the word pound is not British at all. Otherwise, we wouldn't abbreviate to LB. It's for Libram. So it's Latin, so it's...
How do you get from Libram to pound?
Don't ask me that, am I a greengrocer?
Just go...
That's why it's...
Pound.
Two lub.
Well, in Germany, they have a thing called the Pfund, which is a pound.
Pfund?
Yeah, Pfund. And you go into a shop and you ask for a Pfund, and they give you a pound of whatever.
They give you a handkerchief.
Before we start the final round, here's an item from the Sunday Independent.
A novice sailor from Cheshire has agreed to stay on dry land after being rescued 9 times in 13 months while navigating the waters with an AA roadmap.
Thanks to Caroline Stafford of Ipswich for that. Andy, which class act will soon be seen from a whole new triangle?
I'm sorry, we're a bit distracted, Simon. Linda thinks there's something wrong with our water.
Well, it's BBC water, what do you expect?
It smells of gin, actually. I think maybe... It smells a bit weird.
Our water is fine, would you?
You can have your water.
It's my favourite water.
Is this thinking time? What are they doing?
Oh, it's funny for you. You're not being poisoned over on that thing.
I don't think I can hold them off much longer, Andy.
No, all right. I'll get him to repeat the question. Okay.
Yes, I think we know this.
Andy, which class act will soon be seen from a whole new triangle?
Hang on, I'll just check this water again. Can you write faster than that? Alan's got that look in his eye. He's probably got money riding on this. And he's been on the phone to Bruce Grobbelaar again. Right. Linda, writing the word Alan knows is not helpful. That's taking your pad away now. Probably cost us the whole game there. It's to do with a triangle.
Yeah, okay. Alan, do you have any thoughts on that?
I think they're winding me up. It's about triangular classrooms.
It is.
It's a wonderful piece of progressive teaching. It enables kids in dunces caps to lie flat and not be noticed. And the triangular classroom has been developed so nobody sits in the back row and plays with himself, because there's only one person in the back row and you need two for that, apparently. The front row, most of the kids sit in the front row, and this little triangle that comes...
This
right
is radio,
back,
Alan.
And one... What? What?
This is radio. You can't demonstrate...
I can't do that. Okay. What is it? They've invented... A triangular classroom so that only one child sits at the back and all the others are clever clogs and sit at the front. Makes the child at the back unable to see anything and never passes anything. He dies quietly in the corner. Can't put his hand up for a pee. Nobody can see. He dies in his own whittle at the age of 34.
Must be the school in Toblerone Town, wasn't it? Triangular classrooms and triangular trees. Yeah. Oh, Mr. Confectioner, please.
Yeah. They're triangular bees in that advert,
and triangular
didn't they?
Bees,
which
yeah.
I think, thanks to genetic engineering, we have now.
What a world we live in, eh?
I think it'd be very unsettling to be in a triangular room. You've got no points of reference. If she says, go and stand in the corner, what do? You just go and stand by the hypotenuse. Madness.
A Gloucestershire school has decided to banish back-of-the-class misbehaviour by creating triangular classrooms which have only one pupil at the rear.
I don't understand that. Why is only one of them at the rear?
Because they're at the pointy bit.
It's a triangle.
But there's 3 points on a triangle.
But they're not all at the back, are they?
There are going to be so many angry letters from mathematicians and geometricians on this one. And triangles.
Linda, what the duck has been going on at All Souls, Oxford?
I don't ducking know. I vaguely know what this is. Now I can have my notepad back. You're such a tyrant. Ask Alan. Oh. Just about to do that, actually. Because this is some weird posh thing at Oxford or Cambridge where they do a funny old dance with a duck or something.
Once every 300 years, which is the lifetime of an average don or something, they they get a duck out and they cook it in barley wine or something. And it's the kind of thing that's made this country great. It's that sort of tradition.
Go are we right?
Are we anywhere near it,
Are we anywhere near?
No idea.
It was a very absurd ritual. They chase this wooden duck around and they do it once every 100 years, and then somebody sings a song and then they all have dinner, and guess what they eat for dinner? They eat duck. That's the best wild night they can come up with.
Without getting bogged down in triangle country again, how do you chase a wooden duck? Is it on wheels or... Is it motorised or something?
Wheels alone would be no help with a wooden duck. It wouldn't just go on its own.
Not unless the room's on a slope.
All the Master Souls. Carries the oldest boy band in the world. All Souls, with 90-year-old dons. With their jeans hanging down.
And their hit song, Anyone Fancy Some Port?
And the B-side, I Believe the Port Is With You.
Once a century, the Fellows of All Souls Oxford commemorate Hunt the Mallard in honour of a chase after a wild duck which flew out of a drain during 15th century building work. So it's not just the undergraduates who take too many drugs. 2 points to Linda. Rebecca, who refused to let their career peter out by remaking something they made earlier.
Oh, this is such a non-story. The ex-presenters of Blue Peter, John Noakes, Peter Purvis and Valerie Singleton, although she claimed not to know anything about it, apparently, have put together a proposal for a programme in which they get together again and do the same programme, but for older people. And they're sending it to Lorraine Hegarty, who's the controller of BBC One. But they've obviously got some brilliant PR team to work on this, because it was in every newspaper that this was going to be the new programme and that it was going to be a sort of flagship show. And it hasn't been commissioned or anything at this stage. It's just a proposal that's sitting on Lorraine Hegarty's desk waiting for some attention. But clearly now it's got to go ahead because everybody seems to know about it, and I've just given it some more free publicity.
To Blue Peter for old people?
Yeah.
Great. And you've got to make incontinence pads out of old toilet rolls. Why would old people want to collect gin bottle tops and send them in? John Noakes is about 70. See him tottering around.
He never is. Is he 70, John Noakes?
That dog will be old by now. They have it stuffed. Come on, Shep, talk about a wooden duck. Shep running on a clockwork motor on a string.
Here's one I did earlier. I said, here's one I did earlier.
Three of the original Blue Peter presenters hope to return to BBC One with an adult version of the show aimed at over 35s. The format of the show will stay the same, though this year's big Blue Peter expedition will be a trip to the co-op in a brown Austin Allegro. Before we reveal the final scores, let's hear the cuttings the teams have brought along. Andy.
This is from Les Daniel. I'm sorry, it's an email. I can never find the blooming address on an email. I'll start again.
This is his name, where it says yours faithfully.
That's his name, Lynn. Ask Alan. No, I've got it.
Felix Stowe.
Yes, this is from Felix Stowe. This is from Les Daniel of Felix Stowe. A couple drove their car to the supermarket, only to have their car break down in the car park. The man told his wife to carry on with the shopping while he fixed the car. The wife returned later to see a small group of people near the car. On closer inspection, she saw a pair of male legs protruding from under the chassis. Although the man was in shorts, his lack of underpants turned his private parts into glaringly public ones. Unable to stand the embarrassment, she dutifully stepped forward, quickly put her hand up his shorts, and tucked everything back in place. On regaining her feet, she looked across the bonnet and found herself staring at her husband. who was standing by. The mechanic, however, had to have 3 stitches in his head.
Rebecca.
This is a cutting from the Penguin News, which is apparently the Falkland Island newsletter. And it's in a small ad for a place called the Victory Bar. And it says, Ali and Kathy would like to inform our customers we will be closed for the day on August the 8th as we are getting laid by Mr. Lewis and his men. We hope to open in the evening if they finished in time.
Linda.
Thanks to Russell Denwood of Malton, North Yorkshire, for this cutting from Music Business magazine. Paolo Esperanza, bass trombonist with the Sinfonica Mayor de Uruguay, decided to make his own contribution to the cannon shots fired as part of the orchestra's performance of Tchaikovsky's 1812 overture. He placed a large ignited firecracker, equivalent to a quarter stick of dynamite, into an aluminium straight mute, and then inserted the mute into the bell of his double valve bass trombone. Later, from his hospital bed, he explained, I thought the bell of my trombone would shield me from the explosion and would focus the blast outwards. In his haste to get his horn up before the firecracker went off, he failed to elevate the bell high enough to give the mute sufficient arc to clear the orchestra. As a result, the mute streaked through the woodwind and viola sections, narrowly missing players before slamming into the stomach of the conductor and knocking him off the platform into the audience. The folding chairs of the front row then collapsed, setting off a domino effect, toppling row after row of chairs. Back on stage, the blast of the firecracker sent a surge of superheated gas through the trombone to propel the slide like a spear into the head of an unsuspecting third clarinetist, knocking him unconscious and fracturing his skull.
Alan.
For the International Herald Tribune. It says, following complaints from tourists, the owner of a souvenir shop in Pisa has been arrested for selling models of the Leaning Tower. They were made from rubber and battery-operated.
Thank you all. Let's look now at the final scores. Andy and Linda have a creditable 14 points, but Alan and Rebecca are this week's runaway winners with 19 points. Goodbye.
Taking part in the news quiz were Alan Corran, Andy Hamilton, Linda Smith and Rebecca Front. The chairman was Simon Hoggart and the news is read by me, Peter Donaldson. The chairman's script is written by Dave Cohen, Tom Jamieson and George Poles. And the producer was Lucy Armitage.